Hey, listen up, folks. We got a big favor to ask, and it won't take up too much of your time, I promise. You know, our show is supported by some fantastic sponsors, and we'd love to hear your feedback. Head to podcastlisteners.com and fill out a short and anonymous survey. That's it. Promise. Again, that's podcastlisteners.com. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. We appreciate it. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to think that you are a hater. All right, coming up on this episode, really, Condoleezza Rice as a head coach. You got that bright idea. How crazy it is for the Washington Wizards. And yes, your stories about your crazy moments at home for Thanksgiving. But first, all right, that was one hell of a football game on Monday night. It was the Chiefs. It was the Rams. It was the game that you would cross your fingers and hope for. Shockingly, the over-under number, okay, what was it, like 65 or something like that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I could not believe, though, that the number was that low. And granted, that was one of the highest numbers that we have ever seen, but I was shocked that it was that low given what the teams were that we were talking about. But man, 54-51, yeah, missed extra points. And of course you had what many people are taking as a sign of the future of the NFL, except, I don't know if this is actually the future. I'm also not convinced that this is the future that people want, but I am not convinced that this is the future. Now, let me start with the idea about whether or not this is the future that people want. That was a highly entertaining game. I think people really, really enjoyed watching it. And of course, in my job, the hyperbole machine is cranked up, Gabe. I think I saw something on the TV asking, this is the greatest regular season game ever.
Oh, yeah,
we
baby.
Doing that.
We're in the recency mode here. This is the best game ever.
Yeah, like I'm trying to think of like what's number two, right? You start asking me about great regular season games. Like in my mind, I can think of great regular season moments, but I guess I don't have that many like games that I think of as being just great regular season games. Now, part of what tends to make our perception of what a game is has to do with the buildup, has to do with drama. It's not strictly about what goes on the football field. Like if you talk to people about the greatest playoff games of all time, that game with the Immaculate Reception would probably be high on the list. I can't tell you nothing that happened in that game other than the Immaculate Reception. You understand what I'm saying? Like that just becomes the thing that stands out and that becomes our perception of what the game was. But no, this game was really, really good. I just don't think that this game as you had it is easily replicated. Like think about this for a second. We had the Saints and the Rams. Was that last week?
It was a few weeks ago.
Yeah, but we already said. Yeah, so we had the Saints and the Rams. The Saints and the Rams, which by the way was played indoors, like on turf, that was a really, really, really like high powered clash of offenses. There's no question about that. That was at least two out of the three best offenses in the NFL. Just like last night was at least two of the three best offenses in the NFL. We saw teams put up a lot of points. That game didn't have it quite in the same way that this Chiefs-Rams game had it. Like it did. Now, I also think it's worth noting that Saints-Rams was not on ESPN. And that matters because, look, if we got a game, man, we going to hype that thing up. Even if it's a sorry game, we ain't going to insult your intelligence, but we're going to try our best to make you think you should be watching it. But you give us an actual, real, live, good game? Hey, wasn't a Monday night game last week the Giants and the 49ers?
Yeah, with no Garoppolo and like half the 49ers.
Yeah, even if you had Garoppolo. Even if you had Garoppolo, that wasn't going to be no damn good. But you know what? We still going to act like it's something worth watching. Right? Up-and-coming players, we gonna give it to you. But you give us this? Like, the Monday night slate is just, I mean, come on, I mean, this is inside, like, baseball kind of talk of the networks, but you understand it, man. The Monday night football game is lower on the pecking order than, like, the Sunday at 4 o'clock game, than the Sunday night football game, you know? Like, you get a better game than Thursday night football, but this is, like, it's not expected to be the best game of the week, except this time it was absolutely the best game of the week. It was the best game of the week. And so that means you got the best game of the week that people were looking forward to. You get our machine. Bruh, they put our TV show on yesterday on 6 o'clock at ESPN News.
I saw that.
I had to come to work at the same time. That's how ready we were over here for that game. Like, we were making that happen for y'all. And then the game actually lived up to what it was that we were talking about. Like, it really was that good. So, yeah, there's going to be some recency bias that comes there, and we're going to give you a certain measure of recency bias as we do it. I ain't knocking nobody for that, but you got to acknowledge, like, one thing we got to be real about when we work here is that, like, we can be very confident about the fact that this place drives the sports conversation. You're damn right we're going to drive the sports conversation about something that we got on TV. Like, we're going to drive it if it's not on here, too. But if it's on here, oh, baby, we going to drive. And then you got a game that was actually 54-51. It was nuts. And not only was it nuts, and this is why I say this isn't, like, so easily replicated. You got the two coaches there that are schematically probably farther ahead of the league than anybody else. Like, I think what the Saints are doing is really, really impressive, but I also think the Saints have a quarterback who is, like, a tier above the two guys that we saw last night. Like, Mahomes has played really well this year, and he's put up these great numbers, but I don't know if any of us are saying, nah, we'd rather have him than Drew Brees. Drew Brees is out here on something absolutely surgical. So it's hard for me to tell, you know, like, of course, Sean Payton's really good at this, but it's hard for me to tell what if this is Sean Payton, what if this is, you know, like, where Brees is, all of that. Like, I don't get the feeling from listening to people talk about what the Saints are doing. They're doing it very well, but it doesn't sound like it's on some, like, whoa, look at what we got going here. Andy Reid just decided that he was going to operate from a change in the paradigm of what professional offense is. Right? Like, he played a different game there. And then your man McVay, and honestly, let me be honest, I don't know damn thing about scheme. Like, maybe he's just doing what he's doing really, really well. I don't know, but they coaching the hell out of those boys. The absolute hell out of those boys. So, not every team is going to have an Andy Reid. Not every team is going to have a Sean McVay or a Sean Payton. Like, that's not going to be the case for everybody as it stands. There's going to be a point where defenses are going to catch up to what is being done. So the way I figure this winds up going is you got two teams that play like they did there. You're going to have a lot more people trying to copy what that is, a lot more people trying to hire assistants off of that tree. We already saw Chicago hire Matt Nagy, who was an Andy Reid guy. We saw Doug Peterson get hired by the Eagles, an Andy Reid guy. So what you're going to see is what these guys are doing is going to spread. And as it spreads, it's going to be cool, but there's not going to be a growth explosion. There's going to be like an expansion of that level of thought, but I don't know if there's going to be like, how long is it going to be before this thing blows up again? In the meantime, the defenses are going to have to catch up, and there's going to be some hotshot defensive coordinator who figures out, okay, these are the things that we need to do in the pros that are able to shut these things down. Because a lot of what I feel like you got going with Andy Reid right now is you're doing this college stuff, but you're doing it with like high level pro players. Well, there are ways to stop this in college too. You know, like, not every game in college is 55-53 or something like that. People figure it out there. So you just got to figure out, like, with the hash marks in the NFL, with the guys you got, like, what's going to be the thing to slow this down? And that is probably going to wind up happening. And then once that winds up happening, these things are going to, they're going to go in and out. So this is not like every game is going to be this way. The other thing that I would note about this is there was defense. I mean, the Rams forced 5 turnovers. The Chiefs, they don't have a very good defense, but they forced 2 turnovers. The Rams had what? Gave what they had 2 touchdowns on returns?
Multiple.
Yeah, same dude, by the way.
I don't know how much it was, but it was multiple.
Yeah, same dude had 2 touchdowns on returns. Okay, well, that's defense. That does, in fact, count as defense. It's hard to argue that there was no defense out there when Aaron Donald was out there. I don't know what you heard about me. He's very good. He is very, very good. He is excellent, and he absolutely demonstrated his excellence on the field yesterday. Like, we saw these things. Now, like I say, Chiefs, again, bad defense. But I wouldn't say that that game was just totally about there being no defense whatsoever. It's going to be hard to stop anybody in this league between the 20s, though. Like, that's the part that people are going to have to make peace with. And what I think a lot of defensive guys have already made peace with is that between the 20s, it's going to be a tough go of it. But you can still shut it down in the red zone. There's only so much that you are going to be able to do to make it easy to do offense within a compact area in the NFL. Like, space is your friend on offense. The fact that everybody has to account for all the space, that's a big deal. When you're packing 11 dudes and they got to cover a space 53 wide and 80 long, that's a lot different than having to cover a space 53 wide and 15 long or 30 long. That's different. You know, like, that's always going to be it. What a team like the Chiefs can do, though, is they got so many big plays they can put on you. The Rams are doing the same thing. They're hitting you with big plays where your 20-20 strategy, okay, you just need to make sure that they don't get over your head. And they getting these little fast dudes out here, and they out here just running over your head. Because correct me if I'm wrong, Gabe, but ain't like the Rams out there with no power forward wide receivers. It look like they got a bunch of little dudes.
Yeah, it's like a Chip Kelly offense.
Yeah, except they, not quite the tempo, right?
You know, yeah, like, but I mean, like all the little guys, if you remember back at Oregon, he had like Kenyon Barner and DeAnthony Thomas, and all those guys were like 5'5", 5'6", and super fast, and also from like South Central too.
Yes, that was, but that was like the evolutionary advantage I think that Oregon picked up on was, like, if you're at a place like Oregon, you can get fast dudes, you can get big dudes, but you probably can't get big and fast. So just figure out what I can do with all these, like, little and fast. Like, LaMichael James is another example of a guy they got up there that was on, like, the little and fast program. That's what they go with. Reed has figured something out in the NFL that, like, we can do this little and fast. It also is worth noting, the little and fast that the Chiefs have is the, like, the fastest. You know what I mean? Like, Tyreek Hill is really, really, really good. Like, there's personnel excellence that's also going on here that makes me say, okay, like, maybe offense is just not completely going out of the window here. You're going to see a lot of big, empty stats, though. Like, that part's going to happen. You're going to see a greater proliferation of guys like Kirk Cousins that are able to go out here and put up a lot of big, pretty numbers. You're not going to be able to, like, use a stat sheet as any sort of evaluation of greatness from here on out. I do believe that that part has wound up changing. But to me, there is going to be defense. It's just not necessarily going to be the kind of defense that people have grown accustomed to enjoying because people like violence. We took a Twitter poll here, by the way. Gabe sent this out this morning. Good job on this. We got about 1,800 of y'all so far have replied. And he says, how many of you enjoy an NFL future that was all offense touch 7-on-7 if it looked like last night's Monday Night Football game? 35% of you said you want the offense. 65% of you said, no, you want more hits. You want more violence. And yes, part of what is happening in the league now that is allowing for all this offense is that the defense is being told, don't hit dudes too hard, which means you can't really get to the space quite as fast, which eliminates fear as a variable when guys are going over the middle and stuff like that. Like, they've done this. They have legislated out a significant amount of the violence. It keeps quarterbacks safer, if nothing else, but they've legislated a great deal of that out. People need to be honest about the fact that the violence is part of what makes this game compelling. It is, right? And I don't think you necessarily have to feel bad about that fact. That is part of why you watch this, is you like watching guys get hit. Now, there's some stuff that we used to do that is just, like, horribly uncomfortable now because, like, we, like, yo, man, that dude is, like, really hurting there on the ground. You remember Jacked Up? Jacked Up! Now we got, you got mossed. You got mossed is a little bit more guilt-free, even though we be doing it to, like, high schoolers. But yeah, it's a little easier to live with yourself after watching You Got Mossed than it would be if we put Jacked Up back. Like, no, we're not doing the Jacked Up anymore. That's not quite the place. Even if a guy, like, really catches a buyout, we're not really putting the buyouts on loop in the way that we used to. Like, we've got some conscience with us about the violence, and it's a little bit more difficult for us to stomach than it used to be. But I think it's okay to acknowledge that, yeah, the game is a little bit less compelling without that element there.
Which is interesting, because just like sampling the conversation on Twitter last night, and I think this is more indicative of the type of people that I follow, is that, oh my God, this is the greatest football game ever. You know, more offense, more offense, more offense. So I'm thinking to myself, if people just want more offense, I mean, this is the direction that things are going. You got people like Richard Sherman saying, this is basically touch football now, basically 7-on-7. All these guys are playing 7-on-7 in the summers and high school and stuff. It's like, well, I mean, you might as well have 7-on-7 out there and just a million times this more offense. But then it's like you got to get that real time reaction. You got to hear from the people and come back to the realness where it's like, no, we want more hits.
Yeah, no,
we want some more Sean Taylor up in this.
Yeah, no, I really don't think people would want that. I mean, I don't. But wow, it's a tricky thing. Like, I think people generally like football. They like the notions of football, like a lot of the ideals behind it. Like, I think that people generally do like it. But we've all got our favorite enforcer that we liked. And I don't think this is like basketball, right? Where basketball has legislated the enforcer out, but the enforcer wasn't really necessary in basketball in the way that it's always felt like it was necessary in football. They are creating what is in effect, or trying to create what is in effect, a different game. Now, I'm not saying that like, oh my God, football I grew up with is dying, but it is. You know, like, it'll turn into something else. Chances are I'll find a way to enjoy that, but it is. Like, we need to be real about the fact it is turning into something else. That being said, let's not pretend as though, like, maybe they've gone too far, but let's not pretend as though some of the things they've done to improve offense in this league have not been a good thing. Like, if you tried to play the NFL now, according to 1970s rules, y'all ain't trying to watch that. Right? Like, if you could muscle receivers on the outside, like they used to be able to muscle receivers back in the day, you ain't trying to watch that. If the head slap was still out there, and a dude that's rushing the passer could just slap the hell out of somebody in the head and then go to the court. No. You don't want that. Like, a lot of this has been necessary. A lot of this has been good. And we need to be real about the fact that a lot of this has been good. But, I mean, I don't want every week in the NFL to look like the NBA All-Star game. We don't. That being said, I do think that it is, like, kind of interesting to consider that part of what's making this good now, at least as you watch a game like that, is not just that it's a bunch of offense, but it's like a bunch of offense in a way that we, like, haven't really seen. Like, the Chiefs are objectively interesting to watch. If it was just a bunch of guys running all go routes and then every time, like, playing rookie on Madden or on NCAA, where you just send everybody on a go route every play and then you're able to just chuck it up there and go get it, people don't want offense to that point. Right. I do think that they want it in an aesthetic that they are able to appreciate. That I do think is there. But I got something to throw out here for you, Gabe. Tell me what you think about this. I think HD is part of the problem for the NFL when it comes to the violence.
Really?
Well, when you see those dudes get rocked and knocked out, you're seeing it in a clarity you had never seen before.
Well, what's interesting, though, is, I mean, you and I are reading this book about brand NFL, and they were talking about, and also, too, the Junior Seau 30 for 30 that we watched, like, last month, they were talking about how in TV coverage, they used to, like, really, when these big, big bone-crunching hits would happen, like, there was a shift in terms of how we viewed it, where a bone crunching hit would happen and you'd be like, yeah, he's dead on the ground, basically. And then after, at a certain point in time, it can be like, oh man, is he all right?
Yeah.
Does he look okay? And you're right. I mean, to agree, that's the HD, because you're getting a clarity that you've never had before. But I wonder how much of that is how much the camera actually stays and shows these sorts of things. Cause it's like, if something's happening on the sideline, if a dude's bell got rung and he's like tripping out and falling over on the sideline, that may be something that before didn't get showed. Whereas now it's like, yo, I mean, someone can look at it from the crowd and take a video and be like, yo, this dude's tripping out. And everybody looks at it and it's like, wow, there's something that's not right here.
Yeah. No. We can't just write this off in ways that we used to. But it's interesting because, so boxing, for example, you remember that time Manny Pacquiao got put to sleep? I forget who it was that knocked him out. I think it was Marquez. Put him out, and it was like the internet had like Simba trying to wake him up and all that stuff.
Oh,
you remember that?
Yeah, which is cold in and of itself.
It is cold, but like in boxing, we don't got no conscience about those things. As long as you don't die. Like if somebody gets knocked out in a boxing match and they're laying on the ground for like 30 minutes out cold, we're not tripping on that in the way that we are somebody having that happen in football.
Well, they want that. They want that. And, I mean, it's like, I was just watching this documentary When We Were Kings about Ali and George Foreman. And I mean, you got the crowd chanting and Zaire like, Ali, kill him.
Yes.
Ali, kill him. Yes. You know, and it's like, that's what they want.
But here's the thing. The same people can watch a boxing match and see a dude knocked unconscious and be like, oh, damn, he got knocked out. But then see it happen in a football game and cringe. it's a matter of how we set the context around these things. Like, it goes, like, it just goes to a lot of different directions into, like, how we actually feel about the violence that is surrounding football. But I think people need to be honest. A lot of that hitting that we used to love, that we feel like, ooh, it makes us uncomfortable, it is in part because somebody told us that it was uncomfortable. Like, somebody was like, yo, that's not cool. And then we watch it again. We're like, yeah, you know what? It's not, huh? Isn't that a little bit rough? Isn't that a thing? But yeah, now, if you got, like, Chiefs-Rams every week, I do think people would like it, but it ain't going to be Chiefs-Rams every week. That was pinnacle-level football that we saw. It's kind of like when LSU and Alabama played in 2011 and they played that 9-6 game, that was just a defensive masterpiece. It was wonderful to watch. Not every 9-6 game is going to look like that. It goes that way for high scoring games too. You know, like, it's not just going to be about giving people raw numbers of points. It's about giving them a product that they enjoy while they're getting raw numbers of points. And there is a concern that if you stack the rules too much to get it, it ain't going to work. But if you just got a lot of talent and great scheme, you get a good game like you got Monday night. We'll be back in a minute to talk about Condoleezza Rice, but first, a word from Robinhood. Robinhood, it's an investing app that lets you buy and sell stocks, ETFs, options, and cryptos, all commission-free. They strive to make financial services work for everyone, not just rich people. And it's an easy, non-intimidating way for stock market newcomers to invest for the first time and to do it with true confidence. I have used Robinhood myself, and it's really easy just to go in and buy and sell. Learn how to invest as you build your portfolio. You'll discover new stocks and track your favorite companies with a personalized news feed, custom notifications for price movements so you never miss the right moment to invest. It's got easy-to-understand charts and market data. You can place a trade in just 4 taps on your smartphone. Other brokerages, they charge you up to $10 for every trade, but Robinhood doesn't charge commission fees. Trade stocks and keep all of your profits. Now, Robinhood is giving listeners a free stock like Apple, Ford, or Sprint to help build your portfolio. Sign up at Righttime.Robinhood.com. That's Righttime.Robinhood.com. All right, so I was at the crib on Sunday, kind of minding my own business. I look up on the Twitter machine, and Adam Schefter has tweeted out that the Cleveland Browns would like to interview Condoleezza Rice to be their head coach. And I got to admit, it was a little uncomfortable once that was announced. I admit that. I know a lot of you guys believe that I am one of these people that I just say whatever I think, no matter what. I ain't worried about the consequences. Bro, you think you get as far as I have in this game, not worrying about no damn consequences? Yes, yes, yes. I do math on stuff, right? Now, I got a different, like, I don't even know if risk aversion is the right way to put it, but I feel I got a sophisticated understanding of what is an appropriate thing to say, what is worth the risk, so forth and so on, right? But I run that math, and I typically run that math very fast. And one thing about me and the way that I run that math is, if I have even a moment where I'm like, I don't know about that one, then I'm not going to do it, because it ain't worth the risk, because I ain't going to lose it all trying to make y'all laugh. Nah, it ain't happening. So I hear that Condoleezza Rice is perhaps going to be interviewed to be the head coach of the Cleveland Browns. And I'm like, when is it safe to say that this is perhaps the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard? When is it safe? And see, safe for me applied on a couple of levels, though, right? I really wasn't so much like totally worried about the backlash from the so-called woke folk. You know, you don't necessarily want to be on the business end of the woke folk. They be talking to me like they disappointed in me and stuff like that.
Man, you used to be like, man, I don't care what the man think.
You know, all that kind of stuff, man. You know, that kind of thing happens. I ain't really so much worried about the woke folk in a situation like that. What I do worry about, though, is I don't necessarily want to have all the people patting me on the back who are like, yeah, girls are dumb. They don't know anything about football. I don't really want them allies at a moment like that. However, the idea of Condoleezza Rice coaching an NFL team is one of the dumbest things I've ever heard in my life. On top of that, I saw people say, well, she doesn't really want to be a head coach. It's to be the commissioner of the NFL that she really wants. And I guess it is possible that she really wants that. But then again, I heard that and I'm like, wow, that is also one of the dumbest things I have ever heard in my life. Now, I will start with why the idea of Condoleezza Rice being a head coach is one of the dumbest things I've ever heard in my life before talking about why Condoleezza Rice is commissioner is one of the dumbest things I've ever heard in my life. And I warn you in advance that the latter reason is probably not for why you think it is. Anyway, let's get to the first part. On the surface, it is very easy to explain why it would be stupid to make Condoleezza Rice the head coach of your football team, which would be that Condoleezza Rice has been a little busy doing things like studying Sovietology, and she has not been in a position to really prepare for what it is to be an NFL head coach. Now, I don't mean this like when these cats come into the draft and then they have like 4.0 GPAs and they might get role scholarships and people act like that's a detriment to how good they're going to be at football. No, I mean that Condoleezza Rice really has been out here doing things like studying Sovietology. She has not been breaking down the X's and O's of football. She has not been working on putting together a management structure for running a football team. This is simply not what she has done. This is nuts. There is no man that I can think of that somebody has just pulled completely out of nowhere to be the head coach of an NFL team. Gabe, can you think of one?
I mean, that's what I felt was a little weird about this. It was like so far out of left field. And then immediately the Browns were like, oh, no, we didn't say that. We didn't do that. So it was almost like they were testing the waters for it.
Had to be.
Yeah.
Had
like, let's float this out there, see what the reaction is. And then from that, kind of like decide our course of action, which is really, I thought was a little unfair to Condoleezza Rice. Because it's like, is she openly campaigning for this position?
No.
So why does it need to be brought up and then shot down?
No, I mean, Schefter didn't just pull that out of his keister. Right.
Totally.
Right,
exactly.
Right. Schefter didn't make this up. Somebody who mattered told Adam Schefter this, and he felt confident saying this on air, and then it goes from there. And yeah, it's a little bit unfair to Condoleezza Rice that it was thrown out there, but this is just like as a notion. Like Jimmy hasn't been out there talking to the homeless dude again, getting advice. And maybe the homeless dude actually said Jerry Rice, but he didn't understand him. And even Jerry Rice would be a silly idea as somebody to hire as head coach. Like in basketball, they pull dudes out the broadcast booth and stuff like that, and they turn into head coaches. That happens. Baseball, they pull dudes out the broadcast booth. Now, these are normally people that have had, you know, some relationship with the game prior. But still, I don't have a great answer for who's good at doing those jobs in those other sports. I know that if you're going to talk about being a football coach, you probably need to actually been doing some stuff around football. And see, where it's unfair to Condoleezza Rice, I think it's wildly insulting to like the idea of women being coaches. Cause you'll remember John Dorsey, general manager of the Browns, he came out and said they would be interested in hiring men or women who, you know, for this job. Like he specifically mentioned women, which led to us to the step of where we are now with the Browns, right? With the Schefter report. Like he says men or women, and then all of a sudden a woman's name is thrown out there. But the thing that jumped out to me about that is what you're basically telling me is, yeah, if you want to be a woman and be a coach in the NFL, fantastic. All you need to do is have a PhD, have been the former national security advisor, and then been Secretary of State. You think you can do that? What? Like, are you serious?
And there are a bunch of women who are involved in the game today.
Yes.
And it's not like they're being considered for any sort of positions.
No.
So it's almost like saying, oh, you can get involved in our game. You can get involved, but you're just not going to be considered for a job.
Yeah.
Unless you're a PhD scholar and have worked in, you know, the White House.
Yes, it's ridiculous, right? Like maybe if you have an Augusta National membership, then you could come through here, which by the way would make her the envy of much of the NFL. All that being said and looking at it, right? And just like, no, this is, it's a weird thing to have been put out there. And I also think the conversation about women being head coaches in the NFL, we need to dial that back. And what I mean by saying they need to dial that back is we're a few steps removed from that being a possibility, right? Like, I don't know how long it'll be before that thing happens. I feel like the discussion right now needs to be, all right, so when will we have a woman who is like an actual real live assistant coach? Like, not no quality control or no intern or something like that, but like defensive backs coach or, you know, something like that. That is the next step of it, because these are the people who typically wind up getting head coaching jobs. Offensive coordinators, defensive coordinators, and offensive line coaches. Those are the guys that typically get those jobs. The other assistant positions can be very nice segues into getting a coordinator position. But those are the ones who get the jobs. And it's really been heavily slanted in recent times toward people on offense. That's where you're going to have to start. Because before you even, like, this is the thing, like, when people have talked about Becky Hammon, the assistant with the Spurs, about her being an NBA head coach. And, you know, Popovich has said, you know, I think she would make a great head coach. The problem is, while Popovich is saying she would make a great head coach, he didn't even have her on the first row of assistants. So how are you selling us this idea that she should be a head coach when you don't even think that she should be a front row assistant on your team? Like, you can't, like, that's not going to work, right? Now, after she has been an assistant at that point, then people are then probably going to listen, and then it becomes a different discussion there. But with the NFL, we're not even talking about, like, that's where this needs to start, right, is developing according to the lines of how these things ordinarily go. That's the only way that you're going to make this work. And the reason that's the only way you're going to make this work is if you wind up with somebody that jumps the line and then that person is ultimately unsuccessful, that's bad for the larger cause. Like, this is the argument about why you had to make sure you got Jackie Robinson, and Jackie Robinson hit when you put him out there, right? Because, I mean, right or wrong, the stakes are that high. That's what it turns into. But this other one, man, people talk about this idea of Condoleezza Rice being the commissioner of the NFL, and I'm looking at that like, why in the world would Condoleezza Rice, A, want to be the commissioner of the NFL? Like, let's start there. Why would she want to do that? Like, I imagine that sounds like a really cool job, but the commissioner of the NFL, if we've learned anything from the Raj era, the commissioner of the NFL ain't in charge of nothing. Like, if I'm Condoleezza Rice, do you think I have any interest in a job where Jerry Jones tells me what to do? You think I'm about to be lectured by these people? You must be crazy. I got no interest in being talked to like this by them. You think Bob McNair? And you think Bob McNair showing respect to Condoleezza Rice? They don't show respect to the person that's commissioner. The commissioner is there to do their bidding. If I'm Condoleezza Rice, I've worked way too hard in my life to work for these dudes. No, that's not happening. The last time I had a job, my boss was the president of the United States. I'm supposed to come out here and work for these cats. Man, please. Well, if I'm Condoleezza Rice, you think I'm about to come out here and I got to come out and tell the stories in front of everybody that they need me to sell for them? These implausible things that they push out there? Like, when it's time for them to try to act like a domestic violence incident wasn't as big a deal as we read about, I'm supposed to be the one to go out here and talk about this stuff?
Oh, my gosh. And be a champion? Like, come on.
And what's this job? Like, really? Who wants this job? So I hear people talk about that. I bet that's something that she winds up saying. She don't want that job. She's wildly overqualified for that job. Condoleezza Rice, how'd you wind up getting this job? Well, you know, I was a national security advisor, and then I was the secretary of state. So the guy before you, how'd he wind up getting that job? He worked in the office for a long time. That's what this is. Hey, speaking of ridiculous, the Washington Wizards. I remember in the year 2010, the Washington Wizards drafted John Wall. And I thought John Wall was a very good NBA prospect, so forth and so on. But the point that I made it a point to make to people was the Wizards, well, at the time, I was 29 years old. And I said I was 29 years old, and the Washington Wizards had won 50 games in my life. I am now 38 years old, and the Washington Wizards haven't won 50 games in my life. They have had a team with talent and been in the lesser conference, and they have not won 50 games. We all think John Wall is good. We all think Brad Beal is good. At times, we have thought those guys were very good. They were playing in the East. The Wizards haven't won 50 games in my life. Now, part of them not winning 50 games was the fact that they had a coach who had a whiteboard that was reversible, and I once saw him not being able to figure out which way was the right way to draw up a play in the huddle. You ever seen those clips, Gabe?
I have. I mean, there are many, many clips that happen with the whiteboard that all result in rolling on the floor laughing.
Yes, and he just turns them all around. He can't figure out. Like, that was not a good sign of what was going on with him. I will tell you another story briefly about the Washington Wizards before we get to their current chaos. I worked an event in 2012. It was actually in New York City. It was at Clyde Frazier's Wine and Dine. You got a little restaurant over here on the west side. And I was there for a draft party. I worked at SB Nation. And we were there with Ernie Grunfeld's son. Ernie Grunfeld, at the time, was the general manager of the Washington Wizards. And I ain't know nothing about the dude. I ain't want to say nothing bad, you know. But my immediate thought there was like, wow, Ernie Grunfeld. He's not a very good general manager. Like, I ain't say that to the dude's face or nothing like that. But that was my thought. That was 2012. It's 2018. Ernie Grunfeld is still the Washington Wizards general manager. In fact, Gabe, do you know what year Ernie Grunfeld became the general manager of the Washington Wizards?
2008.
2003.
Oh, man, I was off.
Okay, I was too. I had to look it up. It was like, wow, 2003? So let's think about this for a second. I am 38 years old. The Washington Wizards haven't won 50 games in my life. That means that Ernie Grunfeld has been the general manager since 2003, and they have not won 50 games. Who gets to keep their jobs as general manager of NBA franchise for 15 years and you ain't won 50 games?
Yeah, who's he got dirt on?
I feel like every team in the NBA other than the Hornets have won 50 games in a season in my life. Every single one. You pull a team out and I'll tell you about the time that they won 50 games, right? Even the Clippers managed to come around and find a way to win 50 games. The Timberwolves, they've had a season where they won 50 games. The Grizzle have had a year, maybe even a couple, where they've won 50 games, if I'm not mistaken. Everybody's won 50 games but these bums. No matter what happens, they're not going to find a way to win 50 games. And then yesterday, there was just a leak explosion around this team. Now, we've known the problems that they've had with getting along and everything else. And we knew that this thing was ultimately going to explode if we didn't know it. When John Wall did that interview where he said he looked at Bradley Beal as a sidekick and he looked at himself as one and Bradley Beal as 1A. How do you think Brad Beal felt about that? Like, those dudes don't actually really like each other. At least they don't seem to. It's always been a weird sort of situation that they've had. So we wound up, what was the first league, Gabe? Shams came out there, because I can't even remember them in order now. But I know we had all the leaks that dropped. And the first leak came from Shams. I got to go to my...
I thought it was from Woj.
Oh, no. I think the Woj was the second leak, I believe. The first leak was that the Wizards had a volatile practice, and Brad Beal said, I've been dealing with this bleep for 7 years. And then Woj put it out there that John Wall had been fined for hitting Scott Brooks with a FU. And then Candace Buckner of the Washington Post came with the story of what went down. And what went down was that they'd had the superheated practice and John Wall almost got into a fight with Jeff Green and Scott Brooks tried to come over there and break up the fight. And that's when John Wall told Scott Brooks, F you. And then he apologized and he apologized to teammates the next day. Now, this was all last week and we're just finding out about all this right now. Like, I don't know who decided that now's the time to start snitching, but the snitching then commenced. And it just sounds like you got a whole bunch of dudes who really would like to fight each other because they've been around each other for way too long. Although Jeff Green just got there. That's interesting. Remember Brad Beal said he was like LeBron? Anyway, all those guys. But you know who's playing the best on that team this year? Dwight Howard. Yeah. Dwight Howard got to be over there like, bro, I went and got all these tattoos so I could fit in and all y'all want to do is fight? Like, this is crazy. This is nuts. What is going on with Washington? Everybody on the team is available for trade. Everybody on the team is available for trade. They keep talking about John Wall. He got a 15% trade kicker in his deal, and that's going to make it hard for him to be traded. Some tell me John Wall is willing to give up that 15% at this point or negotiate it down or something like that because, Gabe, they need a resolution.
Yeah, I mean, when you put everyone on the block,
yes,
then something's got to happen.
Yes, they're like, yo, what we have here is a problem. It is a full-on total problem. Everyone has to go. That being said, part of what is funny about this with being with the Wizards is, like, if you work at the, like, Ernie Grunfeld, here's the problem Ernie Grunfeld's got in this situation. Like, it's not good what they have going on here. It's a measure of chaos. It is unhealthy. it goes beyond what you typically have with an NBA franchise. But Ernie Grunfeld is aware that it could, in fact, get worse. And, Gabe, I'm going to show you how it could get worse, all right? Here's what I want you to do. I want you to take your hand and, like, put it palm down, right? You doing that?
Palms down.
Okay. Now I want you to turn your hand, like, 90 degrees clockwise so your fingers are pointed out. You got that?
Got it.
All right. Now I want you to take your pinky, your ring finger, and your middle finger and, like, bring them in like you're making a fist. You got that? All right. Now, yeah. Now, what you got left, I want you to point that straight in the air. You got that?
Oh, yeah.
Now imagine you are in your team huddle surrounded by guys and you are doing this merely days after you brought a boatload of guns in the locker room and told your teammate to pick one to shoot you with. The Wizards know how much worse things can actually get than this. Ernie Grunfeld might be like Thibodeau was when Jamie Butler was out there acting bad. Like, I don't understand what the problem is. Come on, you guys need to have some matter of perspective. It can always get worse than this.
I mean, and how big of an indictment is it on him
Yes.
that they're willing to trade anybody in-house? So that means that nobody that he has brought to the team to build this out is a keeper.
Yes, and that this is second place, if it's even second place, in ridiculous levels of internal chaos that your team has had. This is not even close to being first. Like, internal chaos for the Wizards, Gilbert Arenas bringing those guns up there is like Bob Beamon was for all those years. It's like the Flojo world record. Nobody's going to break that. Nobody's going to break that. And this dude still has a job. You put together the collection of players that involved a dude who brought his guns to work and a dude who, by the way, is in prison now because after the gun incident, he turned into a murderer. How you still got your job? Like Scott Brooks, y'all know if you've been following me for time, I ain't so wild about him as a basketball mind or nothing like that. But hey, say what you want about him. He ain't ever have nothing like this come out of Oklahoma City. Nothing like this. Like, this is a particular situation that they've got. And Brad Beal is probably the guy that you probably most want to keep, but he's also probably the only, like, the one you can get the most for in trade. There's some story about Kelly Oubre. Let me go look up what Candace had to say about Kelly Oubre, because I feel like this is actually like a whole thread on this madness. Like, oh my God, it couldn't get better. Oh no, Vinny sent me that. Like, that was the thing. I'm just sitting there with my friends and we're just firing. Like, every time I think I've got a link of what's going on in Washington, no, somebody else has another link that's more information. Okay, yeah, so Brad Beal got into it with Austin Rivers, and I think all of us are Team Beal on that one. No one's ever rooting for Austin Rivers. And that's when he pointed at Ernie Grunfeld and said, it starts at the top. And then John Wall also got into it with Jeff Green, and that's when the thing happened there. And then apparently during the game, Kelly Oubre had a back and forth with Scott Brooks, and it sounds more like a fourth than a back and forth because it sounds a lot more like Kelly Oubre doing this. And by the way, Gabe, according to Candace Buckner of the Washington Post, this happened after a three-game winning streak.
Yeah, so wins aren't putting you right.
This happened after a three-game winning streak. This is when they should be riding high. Riding high. Oh, wow. She wrote a full story, by the way. I'm going to look at this right now. I hadn't seen this before. Let's see if I can get some details while we're scanning this. That okay, they say none of it turned physical. That's good. They were just kind of hollering at each other. Apparently, they had a huddle where at one point they were just like, let's just let it all out. So maybe, wow. The Warriors got to be like, yeah, look at that. At least our situation ain't this way. Although, what's worse, the Warriors situation or this?
Well, I mean, at least with the Warriors, you have, like, the best players in the planet on your team and not all of them won out.
The only thing, though, with, like, the Wizards, I feel like some of these guys can get over it. I don't know if Kevin Durant's ever going to get over it.
Yeah, but that's one dude. And if the Warriors went back to the team they had before him, they were still pretty good.
By the way, bright sign in this, John Wall apparently immediately apologized after he went off on Jeff Green.
But if you've got an FU in you towards your coach, then the respect's already gone.
Yeah, I feel like the coach came in when he shouldn't have. I don't know if the coach should have been minding his own business in that moment. Like, that is so much going on, man. Oh, well, I'm sorry. All I can do is laugh. I'm like, I'm glad my office ain't like that. Whew. All right, we'll be back with you if you haven't heard in a minute, but first a word from Stamps.com. You know, these days you can get practically everything on demand, just like the right time. You listen whenever you want, when it's convenient for you. But you can do that with postage on demand. That's right. All you need is Stamps.com. With Stamps.com, you can access all the services of the post office right from your desk when it's convenient for you. You buy and print real U.S. postage for any letter, any package. You do it on your own printer. You can do it 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You click, you print, you mail, and you're done. When it's that easy, I don't understand why everybody doesn't do it already. Stamps.com will even send you a digital scale. You can weigh your letters and packages and print the exact amount of postage. Now, here at the right time, when we need to send you Unblock Me t-shirts, Gabe doesn't even leave his house to get you squared away. Use the Stamps.com. You can do the same. Right now, use Bomani for this special offer. 4-week trial includes postage and a digital scale. Don't wait. Go to Stamps.com. Before you do anything else, click on the radio microphone at the top of the homepage and type in Bomani. That's Stamps.com. Enter Bomani.
We know you can't be on top of all the news and information of the day. No need for the social media feeds. We got you. Now, if you haven't heard.
All right, Bomani, this first story of the day comes from tech.
My name is Emily Stewart, and I'm a reporter at Vox. Mark Zuckerberg isn't going anywhere at Facebook, at least if he doesn't want to, because of the way the company's shareholder structure is set up. Facebook has faced a number of controversies in recent months, including the Cambridge Analytica scandal, fake news, and Russian interference. The New York Times last week posted a bombshell story about its efforts to downplay its scandals, and the Wall Street Journal reported that Zuckerberg told top Facebook executives this year that the company is at war. All of this has prompted some questions about whether Zuckerberg, who is Facebook's CEO and chairman, might have too much control of the company. But there is nothing the board of directors or investors can do at Facebook to make him step down or give up some of his influence. That's because Facebook has what's called a dual-class share structure for its stock. There are Class A shares and Class B shares. Class A shares, which everyday investors can access, have one vote per share. The Class B shares have 10 votes. Zuckerberg and a small group of insiders hold most of the Class B shares. So when it comes time for shareholder votes on items like executive compensation, proposed mergers and acquisitions, or choosing members of the board, or its chairman, Zuckerberg is the only one whose votes really matter. He controls about 60% of all of the voting shares. This type of structure isn't uncommon, and a lot of companies have it. The argument for it is that it lets founders and executives focus on the company's long-term practices, but critics say it insulates them too much and doesn't make them accountable. There have been pushes at Facebook to change the structure from some shareholders, but they haven't stuck. Again, because Zuckerberg is sort of the only one whose opinion matters under the current system. If Mark Zuckerberg does wind up stepping down as chairman or CEO or making some other change to his role at Facebook, it'll be on his own accord.
Hey, man, you know I'm good with that? Because I'm just here for everything that Facebook does, right or wrong. This is all on you, Zuckerberg. Like, Zuckerberg's so good at shaking all this stuff off and the all shucks and da-da-da and everything else. Nah, man, this is you. All this stuff that is being wrought by the machine that you have built by your Frankenstein, it is all you. You are the one who is in charge. I don't want to hear nothing about no Sandberg or no nobody else. You the one that got to answer for every single bit of this. Because you want you. Hey, I don't blame you. You want to keep your company. Not even mad at you. But you got it. Good luck.
Yeah, and him saying he wants to start like an independent council to see if they can review some of the controversial content moderation decisions.
Nah, man, let me tell you, in the end, what's happening to him also is he's too old to be able to hide in the way he could before, right? Like, there was a certain, like, boy wonder sort of quality to this. Nah, man, you're just a rich dude like the rest of them.
This second story is more about personal tech than the tech business.
I'm Jeffrey Fowler, tech columnist at The Washington Post. Photography has never been about just capturing reality, but the latest smartphones are increasingly taking photos into uncharted territory. I've been using a new mode on Google's Pixel phone called Night Sight that has a superpower. It can see things that our eyes cannot. Now, anybody who's used a smartphone or even a pro camera knows how hard it is to shoot in the dark, but taking photos with Night Sight made my friends in a dim, candlelit bar look like they'd brought a lighting crew. A midnight cityscape lit up like the afternoon. Using Night Sight left me with two thoughts. First, this is awesome, and you've got to see the examples in my column or that I've shared on Twitter. And second, this is totally super fake. The Pixel is hardly alone in moving photography away from reality. The iPhone's portrait mode applies made-up blur to backgrounds. Selfies on phones popular in Asia automatically slim heads, brighten eyes, and smooth skin. And most recent phones use a technique called HDR that merges multiple shots to produce a kind of hyper-toned version of reality. Phone cameras are really becoming like high-tech beer goggles. Think of your camera less as a reflection of reality and more of an artificial intelligence trying to make you happy. It's fake-tastic. Now, some people have taken issue with my use of the word fake to describe my Night Sight shots, but these shots were very far removed from what my eye saw in the moment, and their colors and tones were chosen by a computer, not by nature. It might be an academic concern if we weren't actually talking about a hobby, not to mention the memories of about a third of humanity. That's how many people now use smartphones. How far will the AI and phones remove our photos from reality? What might software train us to think looks normal? What parts of images are we letting computers edit out? Bring on the debate.
So basically, any place can be Six Flags with your phone. We put any background behind you. You can just be anywhere you want. And I don't necessarily have a problem with the idea that you can do that, Gabe. What I'm trying to figure out is how many people are just going to be flat out lying.
Yeah, I mean, there was a story I believe that we did on If You Haven't Heard not too long ago where people could basically pay to have like an augmented or just like an alternate reality for their vacation photos where it's like, here's me in the Grand Canyon. Here's me in this place. I mean, this is a little bit different because it's like changing an existing image. So it's like, oh, you're there. It's just now daytime instead of nighttime. I mean, that's going to change the game in terms of the way you're going to be able to post photos, but also the way you're going to be able to take photos of others when they're like unsuspecting. And it's, oh, it's too dark. It's too dark to see. Let me try and do this. And it's like, nope, gotcha.
Yeah, and also going to be used for fraudulent purposes.
Yep.
Like, this is, all I hear in this is, man, people care way too much about pictures. Like, if there's anything I've learned, and people care way too much about pictures. Hey, where you share them, how you share them, people care way too much about pictures.
Yeah, but Bo's active on the gram.
Yeah, for the right time. Like, outside of that, nah, man, I want off of all of it.
All right, this last story also comes from the business of technology.
I'm Ina Fried, chief technology correspondent for Axios. For our Axios on HBO show, Mike Allen and I sat down with Apple CEO Tim Cook and got a glimpse into his thinking on a range of issues, from his own personal style and schedule to some of the big issues confronting the tech industry, including privacy and screen time, as well as how Apple sees its business going forward and some of the areas of technology it's interested in, especially augmented reality. One of the issues that's getting the most attention is his answer in my question around, if Apple is so concerned around privacy and makes this big deal that, unlike the other big tech companies, it isn't trying to sell your information, why does it take billions of dollars a year from Google, which is trying to make money off of users' information? So Google pays Apple that money to be the default search engine on Macs and iPads and iPhones. And Tim's answer was a very reasonable one, that Apple basically takes all the precautions it can. It tries to limit the amount of information that Google or anyone else advertising on the web gets about users, but that it thinks Google is the best search engine out there. His other insights were pretty interesting, ranging from the fact that he gets up at 4 a.m. each day, he reads an hour of user feedback, and then he goes to the gym so that he can work on his stress levels, to how he uses the phone. He's talked about how he used it a lot of hours a day, and he said he's still using it several hours a day, but he has noticed he's, thanks to the tools they've put in, picking it up less and getting fewer notifications. And then around privacy, I think this is going to be a big selling point for Apple going forward. They want to make the case that they care about your privacy, that it's a core value, and that was something that came up over and over. And the other issue we talked a lot about is augmented reality, so the idea of a digital overlay on the real world. And Tim Cook has made it clear that he has a preference for this over virtual reality, where it's an entirely virtual digital reality. And he showed us an example. He took us out on the soccer field at Apple, and we looked at this app where you can map out what your garden might look like. You know, and he talked about this as an important technology going forward, something that will extend beyond just staring at a screen like the iPhone or iPad, but obviously he wouldn't say when or if Apple might have goggles. Those were some of the insights. You can read more about our interview and see the key points at axios.com, or sign up for my daily newsletter. Log in at getlogin.axios.com.
I think the stuff of the cook talks about woman regulation. Yeah, no, we're going to have to get these folks in. Like, on some level or another, like, that part then becomes obvious. But I do find it interesting when he talks about how he slowed down notifications on his phone. And, you know, because I have this screen time app, and I find I use the phone less because it did kind of scare me straight to a degree. But I've never been big on notifications. Y'all really want all these apps to tell y'all all the time what's going on?
The thing about it is, too, is that it drains your battery the more notifications that you do get.
Yeah, but I've never, like, I figured out real quick on the phone that I did not need all these. Like, I'm not going to have all this stuff just jumping out in my face when my phone comes out just as a general thing. I had no idea that people were really here ride, like, especially for things that ring often. Like, oh, no, 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 it can't be that. This is also, though, where it gets fun for him, where he's like, hey, man, we're a hardware company.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a big part.
It is interesting, though, that Apple takes so much money from Google being the, like, go-to search engine.
Yes. It's a little passive-aggressive. Is that a fair way to put it?
It is. Him saying that, okay, well, they are the best search engine, so we're not dipping into the same waters that they are.
Yeah, okay. Look, y'all own all the water. Even if it ain't the same waters between the two of y'all, y'all got all the water.
Fair point.
Hey, this is Bomani. You have reached the right time voicemail. Say whatever you want. Get creative with it. But this is your place to talk back to the show. So talk back. Peace.
All right, Bo. With the holiday coming up on Thursday and us only doing one show this week, we decided to put out for the best Thanksgiving stories, whether it was the craziest fight, just the craziest thing that has happened on Thanksgiving for you. We got some pretty good ones. Our first is from Al in Dallas.
What's up, Bo? Man, this is Al from Dallas, man. I had to tell this story, man, because being from Dallas, you know, big football family and, of course, huge Cowboys fans. So Thanksgiving is special. And to my dad, you know, it was always one of those at home, unplug the phone, we not having no calls. Like, if family came over, like, you got to go around 3 when the game starts because, you know, my dad, you know, it's to not be interrupted. Well, all of our family is in Houston, and traditionally we're supposed to go down in Houston on Thanksgiving, but because of the Cowboys game, you know what I mean, and the way my dad watches them, we didn't always make the trip because, you know, the way the Houston folk got down, it wasn't always, you know what I mean, conducive to the way my dad liked to watch the game. Well, this one year, you know, my mom, of course, wanted to go see her sister, so we made the trip down, man, and so I think it was the year, perhaps, I think it was whatever year it was that the Cowboys played the Broncos. And it was Ron Dane, actually, that's how long ago this was. And Ron Dane was the running back. And so I remember we weren't winning, and my dad didn't like noise, man. And we were getting killed. Ron Dane was running all over us, man. And it was like Ron Dane, man. And so my dad was pissed. He was hot. And so, of course, you know, all the Houston fans in the background, fans of other teams, they, you know, they laughing, having a good time. I mean, it's Thanksgiving, right? And my dad wasn't having it. So he kind of stood up and was like, hey, trying to watch the game. So, you know, whatever. They're like, all right, man, whatever, go back to the game. So that noise kept coming from the back, and we kept losing. And I'll just say, all you heard was my daddy get up, throw a couple hands, have a couple words. We ain't been back to Houston for Thanksgiving since. Oh, man. Y'all have a good one.
Dog, your pops is out here scrapping out at somebody else's house about the Cowboys.
That's why I wanted to include this one, because I wanted to get into the Cowboys, Dallas, and Houston dynamic a little bit.
Nah, it ain't even that. It's just that being in Houston, they not all Cowboys fans. He just wasn't having enough of it. There's plenty of Cowboys fans in Houston. Like, there's not no raging Texans Cowboys rivalry. This dude just gets salty about the Cowboys.
And wanted peace and quiet to watch the game.
At someone else's house. A house, by the way, he didn't want to come to. That's the key variable.
And then hasn't been back since.
Yes. Well, it's kind of hard to after that, one would think.
All right. Our second comes from Rita in Baltimore.
Hey, Bo. This is Rita. I'm calling from Baltimore. One Thanksgiving, my family got together, and my parents and my uncle, 3 of them, had Ravens season tickets that they all went in on. So this one Thanksgiving, we were getting together, And my parents, my uncle, and my dad got into an argument because this particular year the Ravens were playing on Christmas, and the tickets came up about who wanted to go. Well, all three of them wanted to go, and so it ensued a big argument, and fists was almost thrown at each other to the point where we just kind of had to, like, put them on different sides of the table. So 20 minutes later, I'd say, we had dinner served, and my uncle has always been known to be that fast eater. He could eat his entire plate of food in, like, 5 minutes. So, of course, he does this. And he starts to choke. And at first, we just didn't think of it as anything. And then he starts to turn colors. Like, we realize this is a big deal. So he's, like, choking. And so the only person that really knew how to do, like, a Heimlich maneuver is my dad. And he just sat there. He just sat there and watched, like, inches of my uncle's body, like, slowly leave him. Because, like, this is getting bad, and we're panicking. And finally, my dad gets up and gives him the most aggressive maneuver I've ever seen in my entire life. And finally, something pops out of his throat, and he can breathe. But he was close to death. And I'm pretty sure if the rest of us weren't there, my dad was probably just going to let him die, all because of some tickets to a football game. Craziest moment I've ever seen in my entire life.
He waited till he turned Ravens purple.
Man, that's cold.
Dang.
That is cold.
Tickets, man, it's hardcore stuff.
Woo! Even doing the Heimlich maneuver with a little extra something.
Yeah, fine. By the way, extra something is broken ribs.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about the Heimlich maneuver, too, is it doesn't always work.
Nope.
So if you're just going to let a man go to the Heimlich maneuver like that, then you're, I mean, there's really some extra something with that one.
Yes.
All right, this last one's from Marv and CT.
Bomani, Dave, what up? This is Marv from Connecticut. Crazy Thanksgiving story about, like, this is 98, so, like, 14. So, you know, we're just having a regular little Thanksgiving. And so I don't know what was going on, but, like, the adults, we're just, like, kind of, like, talking to each other, and they all kind of had this look on their face. I guess I don't know what was going on. And so, long story short, they found out that my uncle had another child, which no one knew about.
Ooh.
And so, they were like, hey, all y'all, you know, the kids, you know, go upstairs or whatever. And, like, we find out this whole other child. And, like, my aunt was furious. All I kept hearing her say was, how you gonna embarrass me like this? Like, embarrass me. And so later on, we find out, you know, he had a child with this woman that was of a different persuasion. And he couldn't deny it because, look, Bo showed a photo of the baby crying. His eyes were like mine. It was, oh, my goodness. But all you kept hearing was, how you gonna embarrass me? And my mother told me later on what had happened. And you just heard, like, just bickering, and my uncle said, I ain't even trying to do all this right now. I ain't even trying to do all this right now. I said, that's right, Uncle Bubby. Yeah, my uncle's name was Bubby, by the way. So it was just crazy. I wish I was downstairs, like, to hear the whole thing, but I wasn't grown, so they said, all y'all go upstairs. That's really it. Bo, I'll holler.
Oh, boy, yeah, baby turning up at the holiday, man. Not good.
Especially when you have everybody together. So there's no sort of, like, dissemination of the story where it kind of, like, gets distorted in any way, or, you know, has to reach different members of the family at, like, different times based on who's, like, in the need to know.
Nope.
It's like everybody finds out at the same time.
How you gonna embarrass me? It's all downhill.
And is grandpa too? I ain't even trying to do this right now. I'm just trying to have pie right now.
Yes,
and relax.
That's it.
I'm not trying to do this. I'm not trying to deal with this right now.
And he hit the third rail of American culture. Who you had that baby with? Woo! Yeah.
Next level.
Yeah, man.
Happy holidays.
Yeah, yeah, happy. Just holidays. Just holidays. We'll get to happy when we can. But ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We try to do this thing twice a week. My man Gabe Bassane handles everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Also, thank you to our sponsors, Stamps.com and Robinhood. Also, thanks to our contributors on If You Haven't Heard. Thanks to Emily Stewart. She works at Vox. Check out her story on Mark Zuckerberg reaching untouchable status at Vox.com. Thank you to Jeffrey Fowler. Fowler of the Washington Post. Check his story about Google Pixel, flipping up your pictures, making night day, making day night. Check that out at thewashingtonpost.com. And thank you to Ina Fried. She is the tech correspondent for Axios. You can check out her mailing list and everything else that she said a little bit earlier in the show. And she had an article about Tim Cook. Remember, check us out. Subscribe, that is, at the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to think you are a hater. We will be off for our second episode this week because we're going to take the holiday. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.
The Right Time with Bomani Jones is presented by Goodyear. Discover the possibilities. Goodyear. More driven.